Michael, welcome to
Yes.
Trenton Chapel Live, man.
Happy to be here.
Man, we were talking before we started recording, and I gotta say, you're doing fantastic. Let me tell you. Seeing all your stuff on your stories, Instagram, all that, you're doing great. What made you want to get into the film industry?
I think more than anything, it was just seeing a discrepancy in creative opportunities where I live. I live in Mansfield, Texas, which is a small town. And back when I was younger, there weren't too many opportunities for new age arts. It was always traditional art like theater and music, but film design, the digital age of creativity, there wasn't many opportunities. So at a very young age, I kind of saw the opportunity to create those opportunities for other people by just learning film, growing up on Disney and watching just how they were able to how Disney marketed itself as this one big family interconnected by different TV shows and film. I always saw film as a medium of connection. And so foaming at the mouth, wanting some sort of community like that. I was inspired to do film and just kind of just kind of operate in that space for the young creatives, and it turned out well. So I would say initially getting in the film, there's a passion for it, but it was more so in seeing the absence of something and wanting to create.
That's why that's why I started Chapel Media, my company, because I'm based outside of Dallas. And so there's nothing really here in Texas. It's quite sad. If you want to get into film, I think it goes Austin, then Houston, then Dallas. And
Yeah.
it's very, very small. But it's awesome that you're doing this and allowing this community to get together. I want to ask you, what are the goals for MHE? Like, what is your 5-year goal? And then what's your like lifetime goal?
That's a great question. 5 years, man. I think in 5 years, I want to be super optimistic, but also realistic. I know that the main goal for a lot of filmmakers is eventually getting your own space to create these projects. And I think that's a 5 year or finite end goal. Like I do want to have a space, preferably within the DFW area, where we can base our operations. But I think success overall, just being able to create without it being a hindrance financially, like having film be my as my mom would say, tent making skill ability, just having film be the financial breadwinner. And now I can, film is simultaneously giving me spiritual and emotional prosperity, but also financial, logistical prosperity. That's the ultimate goal.
Because I feel like because we're definitely we're indie. I think we are both categorized as indie people. I think every indie director, writer, actor wants to get to the point where it's like, this is my job. I get paid to entertain. And, that's my dream has always been to be a film director. When I was like 7 years old, I started a YouTube channel and I was making stupid skits that you can't find anymore. And just being creative and just having that. You know what I'm saying? Like at your fingertips, being able to make something from nothing. And it's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I want to ask you, what are the pros and cons of having a MHE, man? What's the pros and cons? Let's start with
We'll still start positive.
We'll start
But
positive.
yeah, I think the pros of having something like MHE, first of all, it's the connection. I think when you start very small, it's a budding thing. You're trying to get people to know who you are, but then you cross a certain threshold where word of mouth alone connects you with so many actors. Actors know actors, and you'll work with some actors on one project, and solely through word of mouth, the next project you're working on is a whole new set of faces. I think this doesn't even just go for MHE, but just film as a whole. Sometimes it's difficult to be burnt out from it because every set is different, every script is different. So each film set you're on, you're experiencing a whole new perspective of creativity. So I would say that's probably the one major pro from all of this, is just to kind of look back to what I said initially, the community that is built from this. I think that trumps everything.
Now let's get to the negatives. What's the
I
negative of having a production company?
think the finances,
Yes. There we go.
the money, man. I think that's a shared consensus amongst
Oh
a
yeah.
lot of the indie filmmakers. Well, especially when you start going into the kind of middle tier between professional and just starting out, when you're kind of working with prosumer equipment and stuff, it becomes very expensive. Like most of the productions that I do, I shoot everything on a Blackmagic Pocket 4K,
Hey, your
and
camera.
it's fully rigged out. So there's I need a every time I shoot something, I need an AC follow focus. I need to have an Aiden gaffer. All the equipment, like the C stands, and it's so heavy. So I think the money and the planning, making sure schedules align, those are the two biggest issues that are run into.
Yeah, I have to completely agree with that. I would also say the biggest con is location.
Oh yeah.
Texas, as we said before, man, it's very small here. And when you find somebody great, I made a film 2022 called Clyde. You probably heard of it. It was a big thing back in the day. I'm just kidding. And I got super lucky to have three cast members who were actually professional, like actually trying to become professional actors, who were just phenomenal. You had Jonah, Kelsey, and Kevin, main three characters. They knocked out of the park, and they saw what I had, which is this right here. They saw what I had, and they did it. And it's won awards. It's The people who watch it say they're fantastic. The direction's fantastic. And I would say the biggest con is location where we're at, but it's also a big pro because you can find those people who are dedicated and then you'll make gold with that. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes. So why'd you call it Mike Hill Entertainment?
It's actually such a weird story. It's kind of like it's not as entertaining as other people may have come up with their companies. It's like how Childish Gambino, he got his name by going on a rap name generator.
Yeah, it was
For
a
me,
Wu-Tang name generator.
yeah. So for me, it was literally just the abbreviation of my name, Mike, is MIKE. And then there was a family member at the time when I was first coming up. She said, if you're going to be a musician, maybe you can abbreviate your name, Mike, but not the traditional way. Abbreviate like microphone. So MIC. And I went, okay, cool. And then I just put my last name next to it.
There you go.
And kind of stuck it together. But I think now, because there was so much confusion on how to enunciate it. Some people say Mick Hill, some people say Michelle. I've
Shell.
recently decided to just abbreviate it MHE. So,
MHE,
yeah.
which is great, you know. MHE, it just sounds, it's like an A24. No one knows what the hell A24 means. But it just sounds cool. You know, my company's Chapel Media Productions LLC. But I just go by Chapel Media because that's what people know. Or I'll go by C because you can't go by CM. It just sounds weird. Let's talk about your directing style. You're a director. You're the director of this show called Small Town Outsiders. We'll get into that a little later. What is your process? Let's start from the very beginning. Let's start with pre-production. How do you get the actors? How do you get the people? How do you set it up? Then go into post. How do you make the art and or production, how do you make the art? And then get to post, how do you edit this and make it beautiful? How do you do that?
Yeah, I think so. To answer the first one, pretty straightforward, finding the people. I think with a lot of, and this is more so just a statement. Sometimes it's difficult as a filmmaker. You'll write a script and you'll kind of write these blank characters, not knowing who are going to fill those roles up.
Yeah.
And it can be difficult. But with me, specifically with Small Town Outsiders, I wrote all the characters with people that I knew in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So Small Town Outsiders at its core is a kind of a scenario, including my actual friends, but in a different time period in a sci-fi. That's essentially what it is. So that's how I kind of found the people. But if I were to go by, like, if I were to try to find a cookie cutter way that I usually go about it, I just kind of find people in my life that I feel like that are actors or have expressed interest in working with me. And then I'll write stories and try to carve it to where it's in line with their personality. And if I have had the pleasure of seeing them act, I'll carve out the role in a way that leans into their strengths that I've noticed. And then I'll present it to them. And then as far as production goes, I'm really a big pre guy, like Google Docs. We have of lookbooks, character sheets. Each character has a color palette and articles of clothing that go with it. The pitch deck, the elevator pitch, the synopsis, if it's a series, the episodic breakdown, like that will all be written out. I call pre-production shooting a movie on paper.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially everything. I'm touching every single thing, and then I get to the logistical side, budgeting, schedules, and then the look that I want to go for the overall film. And that's kind of how I go about it. And then we go into casting. Production, I'm very much a guy where I'm like, I think the script is a skeleton. If the actors come in and then they learn the lines and they understand the motivations of the lines, it just becomes a skeleton and they can just play around with it. I think actors and directors, actors are not subordinates to directors, they're collaborators.
Yeah.
They're coming in with their expertise and you're coming in with yours, and y'all mutually come together and build something. And so I think every person on set is as equal to the director, because they specifically are helping curate an aspect, a vital aspect of the film. So when it comes to the DPs and everything, just anyone that comes on set, I'm very much a, everybody has a say, everybody can creatively give input. Best idea wins, you know?
Yeah.
Best idea wins. So some of the coolest things in Small Town came from someone that was a grip. And they were like, hey, what if we did this? Mike, what if we did this? And I'm just like, yeah, let's try it. I want everyone to throw their ego out when we get on set. And let's just be one big moving think tank as we're filming. And it makes it super collaborative and it's super organized because of pre, but it has the feel of a guerrilla style film. And post, I do all my editing and music production and color grading. So post is just me, you know, locking in and just going about it. But I think even in post, I'll send some shots to actors, some of the crew members, and ask them what they think. I just think overall, my directing style is very much heavy on collaboration, whether it's pre, pro, or post. I think that including the community of the project will not only inspire everyone to give their best, but it'll leave everyone feeling like they own a piece of that final product.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you go through imposter syndrome?
What? All the time. What?
Yeah.
Yes. Even now, I'm like, man, do I really deserve to be on a podcast interviewed about my film stuff?
And I'm sitting here going like, am I really good enough to interview Michael Hill? Oh my goodness. Celebrity, man. But yeah, the reason why I ask is because for So I made my last film in 2022, and I've been sitting here, what am I gonna do next? You know, how am I gonna top this film? Because I always try to top what I do. And you know, I've been writing this one film, and I think it's pretty cool. I've been sharing it with other people, and they're like, this is fucking dope, you know? And I'll send you a copy so you can review it. And I sit here and I look at it and I'm like, can I do this? Have you ever done that? Like, you sat here and you wrote the thing out and you're like, can I do this?
Yeah, I feel that all the time, man. You're
Yeah.
not alone. And it's just a matter of just doing it, you
That's
know?
right.
I told my dad this. I told my dad this, like, we were talking about some business ventures, and I'm like, Dad, we could do this. He was like, No, but we don't have the money right now to do that. And I'm saying, yeah, right now, but imagine where you'll be in 4 years when you actually are able to make the project.
That's right.
Don't write your stories with the limitations of where you are right now, because 5 years down the line, your circumstances could be completely different. And now your project is pigeonholed into your limited mindset of the 5-year-old version of you. So write your stories limitless. And then it's always easier to scale down than to scale up.
That's right.
So just make the project, write it as colorful and vivid as you'd like, and then make minor tweaks the closer you get to production. And you know, I think there's millions of gorgeous, innovative, industry-changing movie ideas that got hit at the cutting board, not by a big studio, but by the creator themselves.
Yeah. What has been your biggest, like, when you're making your, let's start with writing. When you're writing your thing, what is the biggest hurdle for you? Instead, besides imposter syndrome, what's the biggest hurdle that you have while writing?
I think writing natural dialogue, that can be a and that's what I'm learning right now with the projects I have lined up, is even more so just saying the lines out loud and trying to avoid the echo chamber of yourself, because something could sound good to you if you write it strung out. Like hours on end writing, your brain kind of loses the capability to naturally read something. So, I think patience and writing natural dialogue are the two biggest hurdles that I think this calendar year I'm trying to overcome.
Yeah. Now let's talk about directing. What's the biggest hurdle for you for directing?
I think one of my actors told me this from small town. I think my biggest hurdle I think knowing when to pull back, because I'm sometimes I can be a bit too much of a helicopter mom dad,
Yeah.
and not that like I give the actors creative freedom, but I'm almost like coddling them through the entire process, and sometimes I just gotta, you know, like a bird, kick him out the nest and let him fly. You know, I think that's what pre is for. Just pre-production is to insert as much knowledge as you can to the actors and letting them know who the characters are and learning the lines. And once we're on set, everyone just kind of sucks into their role. And I think, you know, it was of course appreciated how involved I was and how much detail I was giving, but I think learning when to pull back and just go, okay, the actor knows what they're doing. And if there's anything I see, then I'll engage, but I don't need to hold their hand throughout the entire
Yeah.
process. That's been my biggest thing.
That's my biggest thing I'd say too, you know. I've been so used to making things on my own. I remember I used to be really big in documentary. That's what I used to make, was just that. 'Cause you can do that by yourself. Set up a camera, put the mic up, put the lights on them, go. Now, doing narrative stuff, you have to trust these other people. You gotta trust not only your actors, but you gotta trust your DP. You gotta trust your sound guy. You gotta trust if you have an editor. You gotta trust them. If you have a composer, you gotta trust them to make great music. And that was the biggest hurdle for me. It was like, oh, I'm used to having everything to myself and just editing at home and doing all this and planning this. Now I have to divide the jobs out and trust these people that are gonna make my thing great. But it always does. You just got to get the good people.
Yep.
Let's see. How are some ways that you got funding? What are some ways you get funding, man?
I think the main thing is what a lot of filmmakers, surprisingly, they don't really do that much is a proof of concept. That's what got me Small Town. The people will see Small Town and go, oh man, it's so great that you got that project done. But no, I shot the first proof of concept for Small Town in 2021, or it was either 2021 or 2020. It was a while ago. And I just kind of, utilized my resources to make it. I think it's much easier, no matter who you're getting it from, whether it's through a film festival, actual producer, whether it's through family, friends, it's much easier for people to see to believe.
Yes.
And for you to just come with a script, like, here's my script idea, and you do a sit down talking head video, and you're like, I want to make this project. It works traditionally, but I think even more so now that we've become a hyper sensory driven society, we need to see more.
Yes.
People arguably want to see the movie before you have the funding to make the movie.
Yes.
So the closest getting to that is making a proof of concept, picking a scene from the script that best encapsulates the entire vibe of your film, and then whatever resources you have financially, just throw something together, find some great actors, sell them on the idea of the potential, and then shoot it and release it. If it doesn't get funding, well, then you have a dope short film.
Yeah.
If it does get funding, well, then it works. It's a win-win either way. And if that project doesn't happen, if you put out enough proof of concepts, what you're doing is you're continuing to be within the realm of film, and you're not allowing financial goals to dictate your creative involvement, but it also builds up your discography at the same time. So you, whatever future project you have from that point on, you can not only reference one or two of the projects that got funded, but you can reference an entire library of stuff that you've done with the limited resources you have. And it'll make someone else much more willing. Oh, if they have that much drive with what little they had, imagine what they can do with $1,000, ten
Yeah.
thousand dollars. I believe in this person. And that's usually how it went with me, was just putting out work and building up that library, and building a bit of a credibility within the creative world.
Yeah. I'm actually stealing the proof of concept idea from you, because I never did one for my old films. And then when I saw which one was it? It was The Architect, or no, the Archaeologist. I saw that proof of concept and I was like, oh, that's actually not a bad idea. Just pick something out, show it. And I bet you, because people don't read anymore. They don't. No one's going to
No.
sit down and read, a 60-page script and be like, oh, this is a good idea. I could see this. If you show them like a 5-minute reel of it, people will be like, oh, okay, this is what they're going to do with this. Okay. So thank you for that.
Of course, dude.
All right, let's talk about Small Town Outsiders. What made you come up with this idea?
If weird enough, and a lot of people caught on to this because the first season very much is very inspired by it, but Stranger Things, I had watched it very late, and it was because of COVID. I was really busy with college, and then that light years long spring break happened
Yes.
in March 2020, and we were all kind of stuck at home. And so that time I had a bunch of free time. I just knocked out all my work ahead of time, and I was just free for the rest of the semester. So I caught up on every single season of Stranger Things. And it inspired me. I was like, I want to make a spoof of that. I want to do something stupid, right? Because all the actors were coming back home from the jobs they were getting in New York. So all the theater friends I had, they were all coming back home, and they had nothing to do. And so I was like, okay, here's a cool opportunity, not only to just kind of solve this bit of a this late bloomer Stranger Things fever I got, but it also is an opportunity to give actors something to do. So I called up a few of my friends, and we got together, and we shot a a literal spoof of Stranger Things. I think there's even like a fake Netflix logo in the beginning. And we shot it, and a bunch of people saw it. And there's this thing that my brother and I coined, the fake trailer effect, over at our company. Whenever we release a fake trailer that is intended to be a joke, and we'll put in lines like "coming never" or "coming out April Fools," people still don't catch on to that, and they only see the spectacle of the actual product, and they'll think it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what happened with the Stranger Things spoof trailer we made in 2020. The spectacle of it, despite those little signals saying it was fake, inspired people saying this would be a cool thing to make. And so I thought about it and I said, okay, well, I live in a small town, Mansfield, that's structurally stuck in the 80s. The architecture has not really updated. I've got some cool friends that are down here that are super driven but also talented. And I love the 80s because I grew up on VHS tapes and 80s music from my parents. So I think I have just as much as a right to make an 80s love letter project than anyone else.
Yeah.
So I wrote the scripts and it kind of like trickled, snowballed from there.
Yeah, 'cause the very first shot of Small Town Outsiders is this old car, and it's such an 80s car, and I was like, "Man, he went in with this. He actually got the cars. You got the clothes, like the clothes that they're wearing. You had the Super Nintendo in there, or the NES actually.
Yeah.
The TV. I was like, "Man, he went all out with this." I even saw this in the first episode. One of the actors, I don't know which one, he's drinking a Coke, and it's the glass Coke bottle. And I'm like, he did his research. And I love that. I love that.
Thank you.
Let's see. Let's talk about the cast. So your castmates, the cast of this, how like you had them in mind when you were writing this, correct?
Yes.
Did they portray the characters as good as you thought they would?
I think even better.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like I wrote the characters with them in mind, but at the same time, the mind is flawed. You could have a certain way that you think they're going to perform it, and then they come in and then just do it in an entirely different way. And that's kind of what they did. That's what I loved about them is that they could go either way. They could portray it by the books exactly how you want it, or they can insert a bit of themselves in there. And like I said before, that's more my directing style, just kind of allowing the actors to come in as professionals on acting, and humbling myself as like I don't know that much, just for the sake of them to have to be able to spread their legs metaphorically, and really taking these characters. And with them, it was a lot of back and forth. I'll do these things with each actor. I'll do one-on-ones. So they'll come in one day, just me and the actor, in pre-production. They'll bring a notebook, and we will just write, talk about everything from like cradle to casket, where the character has come from, memories, just things that no one watching it will ever know. But contextually for the actor, it'll allow them to make the character that much more real. And that's what they did, man. Like they not only got an idea of who the character was just from the first script reading, but they were able to fill out some of the empty spaces and nooks and crannies that I, as a director and writer, didn't even know needed to be filled. And it's birthed a beautiful, not only working relationship with them, but a much more in-depth and three-dimensional, even four-dimensional character. So yeah, they killed it, dude.
Yeah, they did. I watched them and they were fantastic. You could tell them that. I gotta ask you a question because I was watching the show. Did you film anything on green screen?
Yeah, we
Okay.
did.
Okay, I'm sitting here watching some scenes and I'm like, is that a green screen or is that just depth with lighting? Because I was like, you couldn't tell. I was like, are they there? So that's great because you had great effects in this. Like, again, with the opening shot with the pizza boy, him I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but he like vanishes. That looked
Yeah.
great. Like I could see that in
Yeah.
a big movie. Like a did you do that yourself or did you like get somebody to do that?
That was actually James Luke. He's on the company's team. He's
Okay.
the visual effects supervisor of MHE,
That's
and
great.
he did it. So it was great. I met him through TikTok.
Really?
Yeah, we had done. We were doing. It was back whenever Gabriel, Spencer, Josh, and I. We were in this influencer phase, and we had a collective group called Team Wavy, where we made music and stuff, and. We had gotten to a point where we're like, we want to do a. It was the big creative TikTok house phase where every influencer group had their own house. And we decided to do a creative house that was virtual. And I commissioned all of the people on the team, like, hey, when you're on TikTok, scroll through, see if you find someone. And Gabriel found James. He was a budding creator, visual effects creator, getting popular for making Star Wars videos. And, we connected through there, and then a few years later, after that creative house group disbanded, James stayed. We became great friends, and now we work together on everything.
That's awesome. Like, you had a great team. The music was great. Everything was great. I'm fanboying a little bit, okay? So you said that you did the music, correct?
I did some of the music, some of the music.
Because you originally said that in the beginning you were talking about you wanted to go into music. Like,
Yeah.
what happened with, are you still trying to do that? Are you're done with that? What's up with that?
I think I stopped. I think I
Yeah.
stopped. It's been a wrestle between film and music, but I realized that film is much more satisfying to my brain. I think I have creative ADHD where one minute I'm doing this, but then I really, really want to do film, and I really want to do design, and I can't really make up my mind. I'm constantly distracted by the sheer limitless possibilities of ways you could creatively express yourself, audio, visual, video, whatever.
Yeah.
So I kind of did, slow that down. I may every now and then make a song, but no one's gonna hear it. But film is my baby.
Okay. Good deal. Good deal. Let's talk about getting on Tubi, your show. I bet you that was awesome.
Oh yeah.
Did you do a like how did you get that on there? Did you use a distributor or did you like push it out
Oh
there?
yeah. It was a distributor, but I did have to push it out there to catch the attention of
No.
the distributor. But yeah, it was a distributor, a group, Man Robinson, production company in Atlanta. I got connected through them through a filming mentor I had when I was younger in Dallas, and he connected me to them. He tried to do it as like a middleman, but I went ahead on my own volition and reached out to them, and they saw the project, and they said this was the best project they've gotten in that quarter
Wow.
of getting projects submitted. Yeah, because I sent it off. When I sent off, I sent them a web page, fully realized web page with official stills, posters, all the episodes linked inside. It was like basically a digitized website pitch deck that showed what the show was and then aspirations for where the story could potentially go. They saw it, fell in love with it, and I sent them the episodes with some merch that I had created. Stickers and t-shirts, and they actually became fans of the show
Yeah.
while they were distributing it. So it was pushing it out, but the distributors, I gotta shout them out. They were great, super awesome, and they work very hard for filmmakers.
And then you got on Tubi. I saw your Instagram post. You're telling the cast, the crew. What was like, because you were the first one to know.
Yeah.
What was that feeling like? Did you get an email, a phone call? What'd you get?
It was a text message. I was in a meeting with a producer in Dallas for another project they're working on. And right after I had closed the meeting, I got a text message and it said, "Hey Mike, are you free for a call?"
There we go.
And already I was like, "Okay, this is so random." And so I called them and I was sitting in my car in the parking lot. in front of this office that we had met at. I felt like I was the only car there. They called me. Their voices sound very, very different than the other calls. It was uppity and absolute. And I was like, "What's going on?" We're like, "Man, we want to tell you, you're on Tubi. You can start promoting." And he just dropped it like that. And then I had to contain myself, and then I hung up. And literally, like with my fist clenched and my stomach tightening, I was screaming
There
to
you
the top of
go.
my lungs. Yeah, it was great.
It's awesome, you know? 'Cause like how are you putting out the show before I got on there? I didn't see how you did that.
Right. Well, for the pilot, it was a movie premiere. From that movie premiere, we got the funding to make the whole series. We kept promoting it as the first TV series shot in Mansfield, which it is, but having that leverage of being the first of anything really helped build the momentum. And so we premiered that. Then we had a second premiere in the theater. So we had two showings. Then we did virtual premieres because we were putting it through film festivals as well, and film festivals don't allow the film to be out. So we would do these live YouTube premieres every once in a while. So every quarter or so, we'd go, "Hey, if you didn't get a chance to see the series for one time only on YouTube, you get to watch all the episodes back to back in one live premiere." And that's kind of how we were putting out the show to kind of keep people engaged and interested up until we were able to get it platformed.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I feel like with the indie filmmakers, getting people to watch the thing is probably the hardest part. Like, you could sit here and say, dude, shooting the thing, writing the thing, editing, man, that's so hard. I feel like the hardest part is getting the audience. And yeah, I think you're doing great. Is there a plan for a season two?
Yeah, there is. We did an announcement not too long ago, a little bit before it got platformed, that season two is in early development. And so we are planning to go bigger and better. I think season one, it was let's just give you an inside scoop. You're the only person that knows this, but season one, we had five episodes and they were all around 20 minutes. Season two is eight episodes and they're all 30 minutes and more.
There you go.
So yeah, we're planning to do season two, and I've already had some script readings with Gabriel and Spencer. They've been reading the script, and they are just head over heels, so excited. And I had some tearful phone calls with some of the castmates and that were in season one, telling them that I'm working on it. And I gotta say, man, I'm so blessed with the cast that I have, because every single person, when I told them about the announcements, they were so excited, so grateful, so energetic about it. So I think the whole small town team were excited to continue the story of these characters.
That's yeah, I'm excited for season two. If you need somebody to be a dead person, I'll do it. I'll come over and do it. Let's see. What's next for you? Not MHE, you.
Right, that's a good question, man. I think that they're much more personal, but just I just b being happy, enjoying right now.
Yeah.
I think it's easy as a filmmaker to kind of get caught up in the potential of what could be or what's the next project. We're very much like business minded, quarter minded. This quarter I want to achieve this, and I want to achieve this, and I need to get this next camera or make this next project. For me, I think it's just resting and being okay with just where I'm at, and enjoying the scenery, smelling the flowers. Because the moment may completely pass me by because I'm so caught up in achieving what's next, I can't really appreciate what's now. So I think that's a big thing for me. What's next for Michael is what's new.
Nice. Now, what's next for MHE?
MHE, well, we have one more proof of concept coming out, called Eternal Life at the Zoo, directed by Richie Hidalgo, directed and written by him, and we're gonna drop that this Saturday,
Oh.
or I don't know when it's coming out, but I'll say Saturday, on March 9th. We're gonna drop that, and I think trying to build a brand more. I think we have a ton of content out there. With a TV series on Tubi and platform, a bunch of short films and a slowly growing audience. But I think the main thing is getting that audience up there,
Yeah.
building that viewership community and making them feel like they're a part of the company's creative process as a whole. I think building the brand of MHE, just reaching a larger audience and then getting more eyes on our stuff to then breed more opportunities. And then of course, financial, like being financially liquid. I want to be
Yes.
able to fund larger projects, be able to put 100,000 behind a project, and just start working up and making really, really higher quality projects.
So you said that you have a TV show, shorts. Is there a plan for a feature film directed by Michael Hill?
There is.
There we go.
We have one. That was one of the proof of concepts we dropped in December. It's called History. It's a time travel film. The best way I describe it to anybody is if Spike Lee directed Back to the Future.
There you go. That's
It's
cool.
super funky, time travel. It's set in the 90s present day. Not really set in the 90s, but it feels like the 90s. But then they run into this amulet type thing, and it sends them back to the 70s. So it's a 90s, 70s time travel joint, and that will be our first feature film that I'm directing. And of course, there's one or two other feature films that are directed by some of my team members.
That's awesome. Let's talk about history a little bit. I don't want you to give out too much. I don't want you to spoil your movie, but what made you come up with a time traveling movie?
So I say it again, it's just like Small Town Outsiders. You drop a fake trailer and then people think it's real and then it snowballs. It was actually an exercise that caused to be that. At first it was a joke on my brother. He loves films that were African American based from the 70s, and he loves music, so he loved biopic films of African American people doing music. So my brother, we would have these FaceTime calls after college, and he was making some joke, and I said, "You better be careful, because if you keep, talking bad about me, I'll shoot your dream movie without you." So
There you go.
he got cocky. He hung up. I called up a few of my friends. I said, "Hey, Davion, Miguel, Jordan, I want to make a fake trailer for a film that doesn't exist to convince my brother that I actually shot an entire movie without him." So they came over the night before my brother came back, and we shot a bunch of random clips, and I stitched them together into a fake trailer, and I showed my brother. He freaked out. The prank was beautiful, but then he goes, "But maybe this would actually be a good idea." And I said, "Okay, but how can we expound upon it?" He said, I was like, what if they time travel? What if the 70s is not just a placeholder setting, but it's actually them traveling back to the 70s?" And then we just kind of treated it like a think tank. And then the idea of history came, and we wrote the feature film. We told the castmates the idea, they fell in love with it, and that's kind of how history came to be.
That's awesome. That sounds awesome. I'm excited for it. When do you plan on dropping that?
Well, right now we're in early development. Well, a little past early development. We're kind of like in pre. We're trying to get the funding for it. Right now we're seeking 100,000. We think that should be able to get us by. Once we get that, then we're good. But ideally, we want to start shooting 2025, start production on it. But I don't know. After Small Town dropped on Tubi, a lot of people seem to be prioritizing season two of Small Town, so
Yeah. Because I feel like once you make one project that's like really good, they want more of that project. The biggest joke for me in my community was Clyde 2. And it makes no sense because of how it ends. There's no reason to make a Clyde 2. But I always joke around. It's like, yeah, Clyde 2's coming, guys, but it will never come out. But I want to ask you, who is your biggest, like, what director is your biggest inspiration?
That's a really good question.
I'll give you here. I'll make it easier for you. You can pick three.
Okay. Man, these might be some basic ones.
Hey.
I think Spike Lee for his visual capability. Spike Lee, Aaron Sorkin, he's not really a director, but he's a writer. And he writes some of the most interesting dialogue. Well, he didn't write The Office, I'm sorry. He wrote The Social Network. He wrote
Okay.
Steve Jobs.
Oh, wow.
He is a phenomenal writer. And his way of writing dialogue is rhythmic. And then I have to go with, God, this is gonna sound so basic. I'll go with two more. I'll do four. Sorry.
You're good.
I'll do Jordan Peele.
Okay.
I love the way he writes horror and how horror and comedy are so intertwined in his writing. How he vacillates between the two without it coming off too much. Just the comedic irony of the entire concept that he does, but flipping it to where it's truly horrific is gorgeous. And I think Quentin Tarantino for his
Oh yeah.
capabilities of referencing other media but making it his own. I love those guys.
Oh yeah. Great choices. I'll give you mine. So I've always said that I'll give you five because I'm extra. Steven Spielberg was always my inspiration. The storytelling, the just what he can do. Like the fact that he made Jaws and it made you believe to not go into the water ever again. Just is awesome. ET was fantastic. I was like, probably I have I never you never remember what your first movie was, but I always say it's ET. It's just because it's so like it's a classic at this. It's fantastic. I love it. I would also I'm gonna say Robert Eggers. I
Beautiful.
love the like I love his one movie I think of is The Witch, and just how eerie and just we like like weird and creepy. I love it because I originally wanted to be a horror director. I think horror writing horror and directing horror is so much fun. You could do so much with it. And I would also throw in Jordan Peele. He like just having what he has out now with Get Out, Us, and Nope. Fantastic. I even though Nope was kind of the lower scale of things, his magnum opus I think is Get Out. I think it's one of the best horror films because it's different. Who would think to put brains into other people and live on as that, and in the subtle the hidden messages in them, it's fantastic. Number four, I would say Alfred Hitchcock.
Good
As
one.
I'm 23, almost 24, I should know who Alfred Hitchcock is, bro. No. When I was in film class, one of the films that I studied was Psycho. And I was like, how can I make this awful film scary? And the fact that he got people freaked out with a tub of chocolate syrup. Really? And then the birds. He made birds scary. He's up there for me. And lastly, I always say this guy. I've always said him, Ari Aster.
Oh man.
I think he is just getting started.
Oh, for sure.
I think he's just getting started. Midsommar is probably up there in my favorite films ever. Just because it's like it's a horror film that takes place in the day. like who would think of that? Hereditary, eerie, creepy. He did his research for that film. Like that cult is a real cult. Like and then Beau's Afraid was just a trippy mess that was awesome.
Man.
And I can't wait to see what he does next. I seriously cannot wait to see what he does next. But yeah, those are my five.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see. What are your top five films?
Oh,
Yeah,
man.
five out of a million.
Jesus. Okay, off top of my head, I love Vertigo. Vertigo,
Great film.
beautiful film. I think color, the way he plays with color. I think less about the story, but more so about the visual capabilities in the 60s, 2001 Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Super amazing visual story. What else? What else? What else? What else? Get Out, of course.
Yes.
It was gorgeous, in the way that I think just the audience reaction as well, like being during the time it first premiered, that first weekend, the opening weekend, hearing the audience react, and the audience involvement and how it was curated in a way to incite certain reactions. I think it was gorgeous. Let me think. Animated film,
Oh yeah, you gotta have one in there.
Into the Spider-Verse, Across
Yes.
Spider-Verse, interchangeably.
Yes.
I think Across the Spider-Verse, the follow-up to Into the Spider-Verse, there was the use of mixed media was insane.
Yes.
Like, I think the most a lot there's a lot of films that come out during a certain decade that define that decade. Like Steven Spielberg had a chokehold on the 80s, and I loved his films growing up. But I think films that feel very modern 2020s are Into the Spider-Verse, Across Spider-Verse, and Everything Everywhere All at Once. And it's interesting because they both use mixed media to propel the story. And it's poetically adjectiving to where our society is. We're overloaded. We overload our senses all the time with TikTok and immediate gratification and being able to see different forms of media all the time. Having films that kind of replicate that sensation of everything being thrown at you, they feel inherently very modern. So I love those too. And I think that was five. And
That's
if I were
five.
to throw a special, yeah, if I were to throw a special one in
Just for
there,
good luck.
just for good luck. I would say I know it's an A24 film. I know it
Oh,
is.
yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I know Everything Everywhere All at Once was great, but I can't. You know, I'm gonna just throw a classic in there. A 80s classic. I'm gonna go back with E.T.
E.T.
E.T. was phenomenal. I just loved it. It's a very feel-good movie. Steven Spielberg knew how to incite a feeling. He picked the right people to score stuff. Yeah, every decade has those people that help redefine and push forward Hollywood, and Steven Spielberg is up there.
Yeah. So for me, my very first one is a very weird one. People would never have this in their top five. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from the 90s. You know, the ones with the like, they're clearly dudes in suits. And I love that movie. I love it. I love the characters. I love what they did with it. I've always been a Turtles fan. So that film was a big inspiration for another film that I'm working on. Another second one I would put on there is Saturday Night Fever. Have you heard of that film?
Oh, I have.
So I got introduced to that, 2017, 2018, I got introduced to it. And it's not, like the best film ever made, It's the reason why I like it is because of the story of how it got made. It is a very low budget film. They had to like, I think they were talking about in a documentary they made. They had a dude on like a platform with wheels, completely made out of like wood, like completely unsafe, and he would stand there with the camera, and they'd push him back to have like the dolly back effect. And I'm just saying, like, that's genius, and just. It's a fantastic story. I think John Travolta is fantastic. But yeah, animation film. You know, Spider-Verse, I think Spider-Verse is probably the best animation film we've had in the last 20 years, and the 20, like the 2000s of what we've had so far, I think is one of the best. But I'll go older. Heavy Metal. Have you heard of this movie?
I don't think I
From
have.
81, 1981. It is a
What?
collection of different shorts made into one film that kind of connect, and it's just hilarious. If you, it's very adult, so kids don't watch this. I highly recommend it. You could probably find it somewhere, but it's just the animation reminds me of Dragon's Lair, Space Ace. Like that's what it
Okay.
reminds me of, and it's a fun ride. It's so much fun. Another film, I think that's three. Number four, 2008's Baghead. Have you heard of this?
No, it sounds familiar, but no, I haven't heard of
So
it.
it's made by the Duplass brothers.
Okay.
Anything that they make, I watch it. Okay, this is Greta Gerwig's first film, like acting wise,
Wow.
and you could tell. So it's a. So they shot it on like a cheap camera. Funny enough, they got the camera from Rooster Teeth. Yeah. And I believe they filmed in Oklahoma in like a cabin in the woods type thing. And what it is these four actors, out of work actors, are trying to write a movie to star them four, so they don't have to keep auditioning and getting rejected. That's the whole story. And it turns into a horror film. Comedy, it has its moments. Great film. It's on Tubi. I just found out it's on Tubi. You'll laugh at it. And you'll sit there and go, what the fuck is this? And then let's see, I need another one. Let's check out the list here. You know what, I'll do this. It's a collection of films, the Conjuring series.
Nice.
Fantastic. I love anything The Conjuring. The Nun could have been better. Okay? The fact they made a Nun 2 pisses me off. It should have been a Crooked Man movie. They're teasing us with it. But Conjuring, man, to make the third one was really good. I like the third one. The fact that there's a line in it that movie like really got me was we believe in God in the courts, but do we believe in the devil? Because the whole thing is based off of true events, and it's a fun ride. Annabelle's great. If you haven't seen The Conjuring, go watch The Conjuring. It's not that scary. It really isn't. It's just it's a great story about Ed and Lorraine Warren, who are real people who went ghost hunting and captured some weird shit. And I love at the end of every movie, it's the actual audio files from their investigations from the real event. I just think that's really cool. So yeah, those are my top five.
That's awesome.
All right. When is the MHE Chapel Media collaboration gonna happen?
Oh man. If this isn't already that, then
It's the
I
two
don't know.
biggest Texas film production companies out there. Come on. The people are asking.
I don't know. I think like everything, it just depends on the project. If
Yeah.
everything aligns and things work out, then you never know. I tend to not count my eggs before they hatch. I just kind of let life roll in whatever it rolls, and then I can go back and reassess. So,
Yeah, same here.
we'll never know. If you run a script my way, if I run a script your way, and we find ways to cross paths, then I'm not gonna say no to the winds of life.
No, man, no. It's always great to be it's always great to network and collab and make something better with two different minds. I've always said that. Well, I want to thank you for joining me today. This was so much fun taking time out of your busy schedule, you know, making movies and living the high life, man. Go ahead and shout out your stuff. Where can people find you? Where can people find your content? Where can they find it?
Oh yeah. If you want to check out the company, it is Michael Entertainment. If you want to go to the website, it's michaelentertainment.com, MICHILL entertainment dot com. Our Instagram is MICHILL dot ENT. Facebook, Michael Entertainment. TikTok, Michael Entertainment. YouTube, Michael Entertainment. And if you want to check out a season one of Small Town, you can go
Yes.
on the Tubi and type down Small Town Outsiders, or you can Google Small Town Outsiders. We own the name. So
That's awesome.
SMALLTOWN, no space, then space, Outsiders, and you'll see that. And just by following those socials, anything that we drop, you'll see. And if you are interested at all in me as an individual, you can follow my personal Insta, which is Michael, MICHAEL underscore Dwayne, DWYANE on Insta. And you get to see the man behind the company.
Yeah, man. It's great stuff over there. Support the show, guys. Patreon.com/ChapelMedia. $7 a month. If you get the $7 a month, your name automatically goes into special thanks for every film that we make. How cool is that? Your name is in the credits. I think everybody wants to have that. Also, I'll even plug my new film that we're working on. The Indiegogo is out now. The script is done. The Hood. It's, let me tell you, man, it's a different film than I'm used to making. Michael, I'll send it your way and see if you can
Yeah.
fix anything. But yeah, go support the stuff. Go support Michael and his endeavors and everything. Until next time, man, thank you again for joining us. And hope to catch you. Hope to see you soon, all right?
Yes, sir. Who knows? Next time we call, maybe we'll be in very different points in our life. More
Very.
sense.
Yes, sir. All right, guys. Thank you.